Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I'd like to dedicate our practice session today to Madhuranga and his wife Darshani and his four kids who died in a very brutal way. And little Sahana, who was born with difficulty at birth and had to undergo various surgeries to save her life, and she's 4 months old now and looking very cute. Some don't have an easy birth, and then there are some who are barely born, and within a few years or months, they're gone, like little Kelly, just 3 months old. We just don't know why we're here, why in a particular place, or for how long. But the Buddha explains it in terms of karmic residue that we carry. Whatever happens to us follows the laws of the universe, the laws of this particular thread of karmic energy. But we are all so deeply connected, though we may not know that. And the Buddha's teaching always made a lot of sense to me because it speaks to the depth of that connection and the ease with which we can enrich and benefit from it if we just follow a few principles. And one of them is harmlessness, to be harmless, to bear no ill will towards anyone, including ourselves. But we do. We may not start out bearing ill will. When we're little kids, if another little kid comes along and hits us, we cry, or we hit them back, or something. Some children don't fight and don't hit, but we all have different dispositions, and it's all conditioning. But to learn about how we're connected, we look within. We have to study. We have to take the time to know how to do that. You could liken the mind to a screen, and if we read that screen, there's a lot that goes on it. To navigate this life, studying the screen of the mind is a very useful exercise. I was always trained to look at the world, not at the mind, to look outward. So I learned to look for happiness in the world, not in myself. And whatever came out of this mind, this mental stream or screen, that's what I got. And there was nothing you could do about it. You grow up and you get conversations in your head, or you get thoughts going through, and you watch them or listen to them, and you follow the mind. We follow our thoughts, we follow what we're told. We develop beliefs and we get more conditioned in our belief system. The Buddha's system of training, our training is part of that, weighs heavily on studying how that process arises and where it leads us. So we study the work of the mind. We take time to study it in the civilization that we're living in, whether it's Western, Eastern, Northern, Southern, or any combination of those. The learning seems to be from things outside of us, from parents, from peers, from books, from programs, from devices and equipment. Used to be from TV or the encyclopedia. In previous ages, there were scholarly works. And before there was paper, there was dialogue. There was speech, hearing, listening. In this way of training, listening is a good way of describing it. To listen rather than to get happiness from traveling or staying still, being in nature or being in a city, going to a restaurant or going shopping. There's so many ways that we can learn about how this life works. And in this study of the mind, we don't go to the world. The world is here within us. So whatever the mind dreams up, imagines, produces, processes, to listen to that, we have to be quiet. Meditation is a way of listening to the present moment. So the way that we can listen better is by avoiding thoughts that go into time, past, future, or present time. But to focus more and more on a fragment of what is arising now. When you take away all the underlying underpinnings of time, you're left with only one moment. And that moment arises on the breath or with our attention. We cognize it, we understand it, we recognize it. To cognize is to know. To recognize is to re-know. We know something again. So in this, it's very interesting, in this work, we keep knowing the same thing over and over again. Until you could say, isn't that boring? Well, it could be boring. But the thing is that no moment is the same as the one before it. We might think it's the same, but if we notice that moment without thinking, but just listening, being present for it, we don't actually hear the moment. But listening means that our radar, not our eyes, not our nose, not our taste, not our thinking, but our intuitive awareness of the moment, knows that breath at this particular instant, this second. So the most simple way to do that is to follow the breath or to listen with the ear. That's another way. Meditating is a practice of being present here and now and fully aware. And it comes from a word that resembles medicine, meditate, or mediation, or middle, to be in the middle. So to be centered. To be centered is actually very medicinal. To be in the middle of attending to this moment. Attention has in it the word tend. To attend, we're like an attendant is someone who cares for. Attendants who take care of people that come to a meeting or on an airplane, there's a flight attendant. I once wanted to be a flight attendant, but in those days you had to be pretty and I didn't qualify, so I didn't make it. I'm so glad, but I wanted to travel. I so wanted to see the world, and I ended up seeing it in various forms. Boats, planes, you name it. Feet walking, hitchhiking, back of trucks in India. So attend means to take care of, to pay attention. So isn't it wonderful that we have to tend to the present moment? It means we have to be with it, center with it, stay present, don't let the mind jump around the way it likes to, and see what we can see. And we think that we're not going to see anything new. But the more we look at something, the more we see and listen to something, the more we learn about it. If you look in a microscope and you focus more and more in with the microscope, there's a whole world in there. There's a nano world. You know, this is the universe of atomic, molecular, and nanoparticles, objects of minuscule dimension, can't even be seen with the naked eye. But in the same way, whatever we see with this eye doesn't tell us much because we can't even see the breath. It's not visible. But we can feel it, we can experience it, we can know it, and we can tend to it. And the same is true with sound. We can hear it, we can experience it, we can know it, and we can intuit it, we can understand it somehow. It has some effect on our consciousness. Now, I've mentioned that wonderful word, we're conscious of sound, or we're conscious of breathing. And that consciousness knows our experience, even as it did when we were babes. We were conscious beings then, and we are conscious beings now. But our consciousness has developed in such a way that we can reflect. We can contemplate what we are conscious of. That means that we can be with it. We can be in the center of that awareness. Because the awareness of what we're knowing is so deep within us that we may not have any object that we're aware of apart from knowing the present moment. And that's not something that's known as time. It's just a knowing. So then awareness can become so focused that it is aware of itself. We turn that awareness, instead of to the external experience, it's not any longer to the breath or the body or the mind, but it's more to that which is aware. It's as if you turned away from the screen of the mind when you're watching a movie and you look at the camera. Because the camera is what is projecting the theater, the film, the movie. Is coming from the camera. So whatever we see in our life experience is projected onto the screen of the mind. We create that in the mind. It arises and it ceases, moment by moment. It never stops. Even when we're asleep, there's a subconscious kind of dreaming or awareness that is still functioning. But we're not physically awake to really remember it, maybe, or make sense of it. And it's just rolling along. It just keeps rolling. So the film doesn't stop. But when we're aware, there comes a moment when awareness is aware of itself. It's the mind turning inward to itself, and it knows pure consciousness in a pure way, with no hate, with no greed, with no anger, with no fear, with no desire, with no self-identity, but just pure knowing of knowing. at that kind of moment or awareness, there can be a breakthrough into what is actually true, what we actually are. It's a very important way of knowing that we can develop, and it gives us a sense of freedom from the snares of this world experience, from birth and death, from joy and horror, from pain and bliss. This kind of knowing is not blissful, but it's a complete stopping of experiences that we identify with as blissful or not. It cannot be described. It has no adjective that you can ascribe to it. It's just the way it is. It's just the knowing of now, of things as they are, of this body moving within this framework of a reality that is ever shifting and impermanent, coming and going, never stopping. The wind, the elements, the connection between them, the separation from them. Children being born and murdered, reborn somewhere else, we don't know. We have theories. The Buddha speaks of rebirth, when the karmic load has not been purified. There may be another coming to be. But we need not know about that. We only investigate what is here within us, and we bring forth our own abilities to be present and aware in the most pure manner that we can, so that we can further investigate the truth in its absolute form, without dressing it up as anything else. Most of the truths that we've been fed are made up by other human beings. The descriptions of the world, the talks about the teachings about religions or the human body, science, art, educational systems, ways of running equipment, manuals, instruction books, anything you can think of that's been brought into this world, that's been taught in this world, that people have carried from generation to generation, healings, old age, sickness, and deaths, all these experiences that come to human life, we see them in this flow of impermanence, and we have no control over it whatsoever. We're born, if we live after birth, I think of little Kelly, who didn't have much of a chance, but maybe that was all she needed to do, is be born, smile at mum, love her for a few weeks, and be gone. We don't know for how long we're here and when or how we will leave. We just don't know. But we may have come for the time that we need to be here to learn what we needed to learn or to experience to purify this mind system, or to realize the truth and then wake up to what we truly are and live with the joy of that knowing, the fulfillment of our humanity. Our humanity is actually like a moral tapestry. What we truly are, the pure purity of that, is unconditional and it's permanent. Unlike everything else in this world, which is made up, conditioned, and impermanent, because it's impermanent, you could almost say that it's false. It has no solidity and no reality of its own. Even some of this farm equipment we find lying around these grounds, it's heavy iron. You know, they used to make these tractors and farm equipment out of real iron, not mixed with other minerals or metals. It's been formed by hand with high heat. It's just beautifully created, but still created. It's not a permanent thing. But when you see the rocks and the earth, you think, well, that's permanent. But this consciousness, this awareness that knows all things, even this whole earth, someday might blow up and all of it disappear in the universe. Galaxies are born and travel and disappear. I don't know what they do, but they move, they change. The objects within them change. So we're in a process, an enormous, unimaginable process of birth and death, arising and ceasing, knowing and stopping. So when we sit very still and contemplate these things, we can begin to intuit a reality that is very different from what we think is real and true. And it's very freeing to know that. It gives us a sense of a small fragment, a drop of water in the ocean. But to know that what we truly are is that ocean of knowing, that love, unconditioned, permanent, for eternity. And sometimes maybe, I don't even know how to speak about it, a bit of energy breaks off from it and manifests as a human being. And to return to it has to go through old age, sickness, and death. But the suffering we experience when we investigate it and study it contemplatively, we start to realize that we only think of it as suffering. Actually, it's just nature following its course. And when we align ourselves with that, there is no one who suffers. The body goes through its pain, the body disintegrates like the candle on the shrine. And then we realize that that which knows old age, sickness, and death does not disintegrate. And we are connected to that forever, whether we know that or not. But if we study in these ways and ask questions, who am I? What is this? Where am I going? Where did I come from? What is the universe anyway? We start to think in a different way and explore in a way that takes us out of the box of our conditioning. Are you a Canadian? Are you a male or female? Are you tall or short? Are you black or white, or do you have hair or not? Are you happy or sad? All of these things are just germinating and exploding, coming to be and disappearing. But that which witnesses and is present, conscious of the flow of the whole system and of our tumbling through it, there is such a freedom in that. And it comes from being in the ocean of unconditional love and compassion for this entire universal knowing. Without trying to change any of it, it's perfect just as it is. So when we contemplate that perfection, the heart can become so silent, so still, so content. So we have refuge in that knowing, in that wisdom. This refuge does not change. It's not something that we can describe. But it can carry us through all of life's events in a way that is very natural, very brilliant, bright. There is no sorrow left. The slate becomes polished and clean, it shines. And that's the Dhamma that guides us, the truth of the way things are. We come here to honor these beautiful beings that died mercilessly, one would say, through most unskillful action from another human being. That kind of action bears compassion. That being was very ignorant and created a lot of karma for himself. And these beings that died so violently, we honor their life and we hold them in a field of love and compassion. That's the most beautiful response one can have. Human beings have been murdering each other forever. It's just part of our horrible legacy as humans from real ignorance. But there are also so many humans that have been born and died and been awake. Ultimate kindness is to honor and to encircle all beings with our compassion. That too must not be limited to those that suffer, but also to those that create suffering. Because they are lost in their violence. It's a very terrible way to live the human life. So we're blessed to have the knowledge of a skillful, a beautiful way of life, and to share in that ocean of love from the heart. This is harmlessness.